Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files podcast. I am but one of your hosts, John Bruford, joined by your other host, Fenton Costello. Fenton, hello.
Hello, John.
Hi. How are things?
I was going to say, I think co-host might be stretching the definition lately, given my current attendance record.
Yeah, but everybody that listens understands that you are a busy and important chairman.
Thanks, John.
So, you know, we all get it. We all get it. It's fine.
Appreciate it.
It's fine. And I'm always here because I am not busy, not important, and not a chairman.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true, and you know it's true.
Well, look, I'm definitely busy. That's for sure. The important bit is questionable.
Actually, I'm pretty busy.
Yeah, you're busy too. It's just I have to do more travel than you. That's all.
Yeah, that's all it is.
it's a big part. It's huge part of it. It's like,
I used to travel a lot for work.
I know you did.
And it was always done as cheaply as possible. I always remember.
See, that's the benefits of being a chairman.
Yeah, seriously. when you did your US trip, that was last week, right?
Yeah.
Did you travel business?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. I know some companies have this really lovely policy where if your flight's over, some say 4 hours, some say 5 hours, but then you fly business because that's the point where it makes a massive difference.
But it's one of those, like, I don't even know if I should talk about this. It's business. it's business with American Airlines. Which is a bit grim to describe it. Like if you compare it to like Singapore or Qatar or Emirates, so Singapore beats them all hands down. It's one of those strange things where like it's just something. America's awesome, but like airplanes and airports aren't their finest work.
They're really not. You haven't been to Vegas yet. You wait till you do McCarran at Vegas.
I've been to Vegas.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you hadn't been to Vegas. McCarran Airport is just awful.
We got interrogated when we came into Vegas for the for G2E. It was like, do we have enough money to stay? Can we leave? Like, it was a proper like 20 minutes with immigration desk, just grilling the two of us. In fairness, the immigration stuff this time was fine, but typically, like, you know, given how hospitality is such a thing in America and how friendly everybody is, doesn't translate to the immigration teams.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
And you still have to take your shoes off for the metal detectors and stuff as well.
Yeah, but they just want to know who's bathed. When I was traveling a lot for magazine duties. I always remember this trip. So I live in the arse end of nowhere, by choice, admittedly. They'd always book my travel as though they were booking it for themselves. So I'd always be flying out of a London airport, despite London being 4 hours away by train. So you've got your 4 hours on the train plus travel to the airport, plus time at the airport, plus flight, right? So I remember this one time I was going to Bulgaria. I was going to Sofia, right? Lovely city. And I was booked to fly out of, I can't remember which London airport. And they booked the cheapest flight option for me, which was to fly via Stockholm. it's like that more than doubles the time of the flight. And it Jesus makes Christ. no logistical sense whatsoever. But they probably saved 50 quid on the flight. So
no thought to like the amount of money you're going to spend like just buying coffee in this fucking airport.
Well, if I charged a day rate for when I was traveling, then there's no way they'd have done that because they'd have had to factor that in because it took a full day to get there.
Yeah.
So what happened was I got on the train in Ludlow, did the journey down to London. On the journey to London, I got a cold. The cold just came on in like 2-3 hours. Next thing you know, I'm completely bunged up. By the time I've landed in Stockholm, I've gone almost completely deaf. Because, you know, the pressure and all that crap building.
Yeah, when you've got sinuses, sinus problems, flying's the worst.
It was grim. And I'm trying to talk to a pharmacist in the airport in Stockholm, and they're like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, I don't either. Just give me drugs. And yeah, by the time I got to Bulgaria, I was just miserable. That was also the infamous currency exchange trip.
Oh, you've
that
told
was,
us one.
That was a bad trip. Speaking of bad trips. No, it felt like everything that could go wrong did. Have you ever taken acid, Fintan? Have you ever had a bad trip?
No.
No, you haven't had a bad trip, or no, you haven't taken acid?
Both.
Don't. It's not as much fun as people make out.
It's not my thing.
Mushrooms, though. Oh, but we are not condoning drug abuse here at all. I was thinking, right? So we had a big episode
the other week, right?
We did. We had two big episodes when we were joined by the Colossus himself, Mr. Andrew Rhodes of the Gambling Commission in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had quite a lot of listeners, didn't we? And we've gained some new followers for that.
We've gained a lot of new followers.
Yeah, yeah. We have. Thank
you, Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you, yes. And we've never called him Rhodesy.
We're going to fix that. He's Rhodesy from now on.
No, that would be disrespectful.
We know you're listening.
That would be disrespectful of the Rhodesmeister. You messaged me.
I did.
So what happened?
We charted globally on the Apple podcast charts. Is the only way to describe it. So we're in the business news category. So we're up against the likes of like Tim Ferriss, The Economist, Wall Street Journal, Diary of a CEO. Like there's some big heavy hitter, Bloomberg, CNN, CNBC, you know, all that kind of business news media giants. And us.
Found our place.
I'm just looking at the list. So Ireland, Spain, Poland, UK, obviously, UAE, South Africa, Hong Kong, just run down the list. US is the big one, because obviously there's a lot of competition there and there's a lot of stuff. New Zealand. Did I say Spain?
I don't know, but say it again. It's fine.
Spain, Germany, Australia, India. So we charted in all of those countries.
Holy shit. Hey.
Yeah.
You know who that's good for?
That's great for our sponsors.
It really is. But it's funny you should mention them, Fintan.
Who are our sponsors, John?
That is a great question. Well, I suppose the headline sponsor, the Titan, the cherry on top of this Gambling Files cake, would be Clarion Gaming, I think it's fair to
what
say.
What have they got? They've got a big awards thing coming up soon, haven't they?
Well, they've got the IGB Affiliate Awards, which they're doing nominations for at the moment.
Which is brilliant. I believe, I'm just double checking, I believe I've been a recipient of an IGB Affiliate Award.
Ooh.
Marketing Campaign of the Year 2022.
Wow. Well, maybe somebody needs to nominate you this year. You may have come up in conversation when we had the nice gentleman on last week.
Yeah.
I don't want to say for sure. I forget.
I'll have to play back. The IGB Affiliate Awards, it's a great award, very stiff competition, super solid judging panel, and a bloody great night out.
Well, good. And that's pretty exciting. And I think you can still vote at the moment. I've got a feeling.
Yeah, I saw a post. I don't want, as we're recording this, it's definitely still open.
So we're recording this Tuesday, 24th of October. Nominations are still open. So if you want to nominate the Lifetime Achievement Award and you listen to last week's episode, you know who I'm talking about.
I've been traveling. I haven't listened to last week's episode.
So who else are our sponsors, Fintan?
We have the lovely people at BeWise Media.
BeWise Media, what do they do?
They do super smart stuff with media. they are, if you're a, the few strings to their bow, they're a very talented group. If you are a sports publisher, so you own a massive kind of sports website, sports news website, scores website, that type of thing, they will help you monetize your traffic better and basically deal with all those very aggressive operator salespeople who are trying to buy your inventory. And BeWise can manage that, increase your yields, and help you make more money.
Well, the reason that companies like BeWise exist is because media buying is a pain in the sack.
There's that. Well, and then the flip side is if you're an operator and you're looking to buy media, particularly in markets, in gray markets or places where maybe it's harder to get onto Google or Facebook, BeWise, because they've got the publisher relationships, they've got a lot of exclusivity, exclusive inventory that you just can't get elsewhere. They've got a whole media buying thing where they will help you with that. They've also got a whole really, really smart stuff, actually. Creative team. So basically, they'll take your existing creative and just make it better, make it more native, improve your click-through rates, improve your conversion rates. So super smart guys and definitely worth a conversation.
Yes. And I can't speak for the entire company, but certainly just speaking about Sebastian, he's very nice. The rest of the company might be awful people, but Sebastian is nice.
But then they've done the right thing. You know, you put the nice guy out front and you take it on from there, right?
Yeah, but what's bonus finder's excuse?
It's the best of a bad lot.
Oh, hang on. We're being joined by two special guests.
Oh, yeah.
We are.
Hi.
That's Annie Rose.
Fantastic.
Yes, and Fern.
Hello.
I can't bring the microphone over to you, so would you mind coming around?
With Annie?
Well, no, because you'd have to carry Annie, so that Annie, you just need to shout. Hello.
Hi, guys. Hi.
Hello. Can she hear, or have you got your headphones on?
I've got my headphones on. Fenton says hello, Annie.
Sorry for deafening all the listeners. Right,
somehow. I don't know how. So let's wrap up this intro because Annie's here. And very quickly say who we have on the episode. Who do we have on the episode, Fintan?
We have the absolutely wonderful Chief Product Officer, David King from Rivalry.com. Rivalry.com is an esports betting focused website. They've expanded into sportsbook, they've expanded into casino. From my perspective, they're doing some of the most innovative product development in sportsbook with anybody in the industry. Super smart guys. They've got some greats, like how they've tackled cash out, the game development they're doing, same game parlays. So it's not just what they're doing, but it's how they're doing it, kind of the design thinking they're doing, how they're managing their existing audience, or tailoring everything to their audience, being very, very clear about that. And they're a super bunch.
Well, thank you for that, Fintan. That's great. This, just in case anybody didn't believe me, is Fern.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Fern.
First thing Fern said was, oh my God, look at his hair.
Yeah, I often come on a Tuesday to support John, bring his pearl cream round and any other ailments.
Yeah, that's fair.
But guests, don't worry, I don't rub it on.
No, because that would be rude.
Oh.
Oh, thank you very much. That was Fern. She's just delivered Annie Rose. And let's go and meet Mr. King.
Enjoy.
We join the first podcast guest of the week. We are blessed by the arrival of Mr. David King, Director of Product Design at Rivalry. David, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
David, first question, how tall are you?
I am 6'0" on the dot.
Interesting. So he's taller than you, Fintan.
Yeah. Yeah. 5'11" and a half. That half.
5'11". Oh, yeah, that's close. It's very close.
Yeah, it's hence the hair. Hence the hair.
Hair will give you the extra half inch you need.
At least.
In a police lineup type photo, Fintan, everybody would be like, well, so, no, I haven't seen that guy. He looks about 6'2". I saw a guy that's 5'11 and a half, but I don't think it can be the same man.
But I did get, and I only realized afterwards, years ago, I joined the gym. And you know that they do like the little induction and they kind of take all your measurements and they show you all the stuff and stuff. So she took all my measurements. She measured my height. She writes down 6'1". And I'll be honest, I was strutting for the rest of the fucking, I was just like, oh my God, I didn't realize I was 6'1". And it was only afterwards I'm sitting there going, bet she does that to all the blokes. I reckon that's just her thing. I got the 2-year membership. I got the fucking.
It's a good tactic. It's a very good tactic.
Just add 2 inches. It's all you need to do. Men are easy.
Reminds me of this. Oh God, this is going to sound. So I was at the cinema with a bunch of my mates, right? And I was like, you know, getting into the seat and getting comfortable and wheeling my ass around and all this, my big fat ass. And my mate was like, have you got enough room there? I'm like, yeah, I think so. Am I a bit close? And she looked down and she goes, well, there's probably a good 6 inches between us. And I looked down and there was 2 inches between us. And her boyfriend was sitting on the other side of her. And I said,
oh,
I don't know what you've been telling us 6 inches looks like, but you two need to have a chat. And I was quite unpopular for the rest of that weekend.
Ruined as popcorn. Angry eating. Booking is, you know.
So, David, so we know how tall you are. We know you are, and we haven't mentioned this yet, but you're from Canada.
Yes, that's right. I live in Toronto.
We love bringing up Canada on this. We're hopefully going to have some more Canadians on soon as well. I've got high hopes. But I like bringing up that Terry Fox is one of my heroes and Douglas Coupland is one of my favorite writers, both proud Canadians.
Yeah, absolutely.
So always a revelation to Europeans to find that there is more than just Bryan Adams.
Yes, there's a lot more than Bryan Adams in Canada, although he is a national treasure.
There's also Drake, right? That's
yes, there's Drake.
Oh, yeah, but that's not my
Drake
generation.
Drake of steak.
It's not my generation, Fintan. That's like that's the damn with the kids kind of conversation.
I don't think it is.
Somebody says Drake, I immediately think that they're talking about ducks.
Could be.
No, did you see Drake at the weekend? Well, I saw some swans. I don't think that counts. So, David, what is Rivalry?
Yeah,
in case anybody doesn't know.
Sure. So Rivalry is a betting website and app. That's primarily focused on esports betting. We started Rivalry about 5 years ago, so we're a relatively new player on the field. And we're, you know, our base is founded in Canada, based out of Canada, but we operate, you know, all over the world. And it's been a bit of a wild ride. We're esports focused, definitely. Focused on more of a millennial Gen Z generation of bettors. And we offer, you know, esports betting, sports betting. We recently, just this past year, we added casino to our offering. We're starting to make some moves, growing very quickly, and just trying to kind of make a splash as the new players in the gambling space.
So there's one of the reasons I was so excited to get you on is the level of innovation I'm seeing coming from Rivalry on the product side of things is fantastic. Before we get to that, because I'm quite excited to talk about that, like who's behind the company? Like how, like you talked about 6 years. What made you guys kind of like, hey, let's go do this? What's the background and what's your hero story?
Sure, yeah. So Rivalry was founded in 2018 by our CTO, our CMO, and our CEO. That's Ryan, Sauls, and Kevin. And they basically, you know, none of them were from the gambling space originally. They actually approached esport, the rivalry, from more of a an esports perspective. They, you know, they knew they had a passion for esports. They were all gamers, and they knew they wanted to do something in that space. So the original rivalry was actually a company called Loot Market, which did Counter-Strike skin trading. And then you know, they did that for about a year, and it didn't quite pan out and everything. And you know, they kind of pivoted into esports betting and started up Rivalry, and started in Ryan's basement, just on Spadina Street here in Toronto. And I joined about a year into the company, so I wasn't there at the very, very start, but I was in pretty early on. I think we were about 12 people when I joined. And we had just moved to a small office on Spadina Street. And, you know, when I joined, we were very, very small. We only had esports betting. We didn't offer any traditional sports. We didn't have casino. We didn't have anything else. We only had about 8 matches a day offered on our website. We probably had, you know, less than 10,000 accounts created at the time. It was very, very small. And I kind of joined, I was coming out of a job that I very much enjoyed the job, but the company I was working at the time wasn't super growth focused, and I was looking for something a little bit more ambitious. Mm-hmm. And I just came across this random esports focused company. And, you know, I'm a big nerd. I grew up playing video games instead of playing outside.
What's your go-to video game as a kid? What was the game?
For me, it was StarCraft. StarCraft was poison as a child. I was never very good at it, but I still tried my best. just hours and hours playing StarCraft and with my friends, and calling in sick from school and getting on dial-up and hoping my parents didn't call home and realize I was on the internet. but then I joined Rivalry, and, you know, it was just kind of a whim. I'm like, here's a small company, you know, who knows if it will go anywhere, but it's something I'm interested in. The people were really cool. Everyone was similar age to me. And I joined up, and I was the only designer at the entire company at the time. So I was doing everything from, you know, designing the actual web product to doing business cards and social media adverts and, you know, basically logos and anything that came across my desk was, you know, I was just the only designer at the time. And then over the years, we've, you know, thankfully been very successful with what we've been doing so far, and was able to bring in some help and build a bit of a team that now does the design. We've got, we kind of split our design team into two teams, into like a marketing and creative and brand team, and then I head up the product design team. So I work with my small team of designers doing basically anything that sits on rivalry.com. We recently launched our first mobile app for iOS, so we're working on that now too. Android coming soon.
Okay, so that's really cool. So I suppose when we look at the kind of the esports betting landscape. And, you know, the gambling. Okay, so what I love is you guys have come in from outside of the gambling industry. So
yes,
the gambling industry as a whole typically isn't very good at original ideas. Mm-hmm. They're very good at copying stuff that works, but everyone's afraid to make that first move. The topic of esports betting within the industry has been, like, if you look back at like every gambling conference for the last 8 years, there's at least, you know, an entire thing dedicated to esports betting. It doesn't really seem to have caught on within the industry. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's like just expectations are different compared to like soccer or say NFL in America or soccer around the world. If it's just, you know, middle-aged guys just who've never played StarCraft just aren't going to get this right. You know, there's been famous act like Unicorn got bought by Entain, and I think they've recently just shut it down. There's been a few other of those kind of like stuff getting snapped up and then kind of just dying slowly kind of thing. What's different for you guys? Is it because of say the background in say skins betting and stuff, where you really understand the audience much better than everybody else? Like what's you think's the secret sauce?
I think you kind of nailed it there. I think it really is just understanding esports from a fundamental level. It's a very, very different world than sports betting. Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies who, you know, have their foundation in sports betting and grew to success through sports betting, they look at esports as, you know, here's a new opportunity. Let's apply our playbook to esports and let's, you know, acquire an esports audience. And it just doesn't really work like that. I think what made us unique and why we've been able to find success in this space is, like you said, none of us came from the gambling industry. We all came from Rivalry was really founded on a passion for esports and for video games. And everyone working here either has, you know, just loves video games, loves esports, or comes from an esports background. So we've made sure to really build our company with a deep understanding of the community and an involvement in the community too. So, you know, we've got, you know, former esports professionals on our team. We've got broadcasters, we've got influencers, we've got game designers. And we've been able to kind of just, you know, really take our understanding of that community and been able to appeal to the audience in a way that no one else really has in the space as of yet.
Okay. And I get that, because I think now it was that's a perfect segue to some of the product stuff I'm seeing come from your team. That's just blowing me away and making me giddy with excitement. We're going to start backwards. Yep. Let's start with Chicken Out.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Tell everyone about Chicken Out.
Sure. Chicken Out. So Chicken Out is Rivalry's version of a cash out feature. But it's got our own kind of brand of sauce on it. So essentially, it came to be, you know, we were just in a design meeting. It was me and a couple other designers just shooting the shit. We knew we were adding, cash out to the feature. And just in the meeting, somebody mentioned, you know, oh, these people are going to chicken out of their bets. And, you know, just for that one comment, I'm like, hold on a sec. Let's talk about that. That's kind of funny, like chickening out of your bets. It's got a bit more personality and attitude to it. So we just kind of went with that idea and just rolled with it. And, you know, instead of cashing out, we call it chicken out. And when you go to chicken out of your bet, you know, in the bet slip, you hit the button and a chicken pops out of the side with cash in his mouth. And as you drag the little slider there, it starts. If you cash out at zero, it starts on an egg. But as you drag the slider, it becomes a chick, and then a chicken. And if you fully cash out, it's a piece of fried chicken.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So what I love about this is from our perspective. Okay, so there's like, I don't know. Let's say there's 10,000 different sports books around the world, just as an easy estimate.
Yep.
They've all got cash out. Mm-hmm. And they've all just kind of called the cash out. I'm imagining. I could be wrong. But let's just say everyone's pretty much just gone with cash out. It's cash out. You hit the button. And the operator's so focused on making margin from the cash out and applying the feature that they've seen on their nearest rivals website. Nobody's thought about it from a brand experience. Like this really kind of like on-brand experience, I think, is just phenomenal.
Thank you. Yeah, we try to do that. I mean, honestly, it's really just... we have a really creative team and we like to have fun and are thankfully, like, you know, the leadership of the company is really, really embrace that and really empowers everyone here to be as creative as possible, to come up with the dumb ideas, come up with the stupid memes, and then actually integrate it into our product. We're not afraid to, like, you know, go there, as to say.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny because you integrate something small like that and then it kind of rolls into your brand, and the chicken has kind of become one of Rivalry's unofficial mascots over the past couple years. You know, not just from the chicken out, but, you know, it's got roots in esports too. You know, Counter-Strike's a big game for us, and in Counter-Strike, famously, you can, you know, shoot all the chickens on the map. So we've used chicken in a bit of a marketing, and then, you know, at the Counter-Strike Rio Major a couple years ago, we got one of our influencers, this big jacked guy, like a beefcake of a man, and put him in a chicken head and a cape, and he was running around, you know, getting picture taken. We weren't an official sponsor, so we weren't technically supposed to market at the event, but
nice.
You know, that didn't really count. He didn't have our logo on it, and he was a big hit. So the chicken's kind of become a bit of a symbol at Rivalry.
John is available for conferences if you need a chicken with a cape. That is right. Totally fine. I'm just going to volunteer him for that.
No, that's a good call, Fintan. Also, I've got a... I don't know if I call it a trick, really. It doesn't really involve sleight of hand, but it involves a hard-boiled egg and an actual live laying experience.
Oh, wow. We'll talk. We'll talk.
I just need a little bit of olive oil and a shoehorn.
This isn't what we wanted at all. We thought it was a joke. Stop it. Children crying. John just getting tasered with a chicken head on. His trousers around his ankles.
That's it. I've left the chicken head on.
Yeah,
I've
exactly.
Pulled the suit down.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, ironically, let's just get a suit designed with a hatch in the back. It'll be
fun. A little flap. Yeah, that could work. It could work. There's something here.
That's not beyond the realm of possibility for us, to be honest.
Tins go for it. Okay. I've got a short list of product stuff that you guys have been doing.
Yeah.
The other really interesting one is the same game combos.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So same game combos, obviously, you know, it's been a staple of sports betting for a long time, but it hasn't been, it just hasn't existed in esports. Until very, very recently, there just hasn't been, I guess there hasn't been the, you know, the providers working on it with the same focus. So we're excited to bring same game combos to esports. We're one of the first ones in the world to do it. And we just recently released it about 2-3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got it on the site now. And it's been, you know, it's been very popular, very successful to bring, you know, same games to esports. And, you know, like everything we do, we try and bring a little bit of extra spicy sauce to it. So we kind of worked with our creative team to come up with a campaign to launch it. And our whole theme is big brain combos is what we call them. And we did like a whole marketing campaign where we've got an illustrator who works our team, Spencer, who's fantastic, who did a whole great series of videos and these pencil illustrations that are hilarious. If you get a chance to check them out, I highly recommend. They're all on our LinkedIn. And then kind of to tie it all together, you know, we always try to make sure that, like, you know, we work with our creative branding team to have kind of an integrated experience. So they, you know, they promote big brain combos exterior to the site, but then mm-hmm. when people come to the site, we want that experience to continue. We want that entertainment to continue and to reflect some of that branding in the product itself. So when you go to our website now and you switch into same game combo mode, we've got a giant galaxy brain head that pops out of the out of the page, and the entire background changes to like space, and we've got this big kind of like galaxy brain experience going on, which is, you know, just adds that little bit of fun and that continuity between our brand and our product, and just makes we always try to make the experience of placing a bet part of the entertainment as well. And we talk about that a lot. We talk about Rivalry. Rivalry at its core is an entertainment company, and we just want to fit as much entertainment into every little bit of the experience as possible. So it's fun to use the product. It's memorable to use the product. And, you know, we create these viral moments that can be shared and, you know.
What's the, just within that then, what's the fan hypometer?
Oh, the fan hypometer? Oh, the fan hypometer, it's just, all it does is show, you know, which side of the market is popular.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But again, it's the same thing where you're like taking something that a lot of bookies have, but then applying it in a fun way. Or more relatable way, right?
Yeah, and something, it's actually, you know, I feel like we've been kind of blessed in a way. We have such a unique opportunity because Rivalry's audience is, you know, that millennial Gen Z market and is so esports focused. One thing that we realized very early on is our users don't have a history in traditional sports betting. You know, for a lot of users, the first time they ever placed a bet is on Rivalry.com for them. And they're kind of new to this betting world, which has really given us a unique opportunity to kind of break away from a lot of the traditions in a way that's, you know, that's okay for our users. Like, they don't know what a parlay is. They don't know what an accumulator is. They don't know these terms. They don't know the jargon. They're not used to, you know, things like a bet slips and whatnot. It's all new to them. So it's kind of given us an opportunity to, you know, break away from that language and break away from all those traditional tropes and kind of come up with things that appeal to them directly. You know, we kind of, it's almost like a fresh slate on the world of betting.
That's fascinating. So there was something, a previous guest, Alan Bowden, he's a really super smart guy, and he works for Eliers and Krycek. Is that how you pronounce it, John?
Eliers and Krycek.
That's the one. I always get it wrong. And he talked about something when you're interviewing consumers about sportsbook apps and like what they like, what they don't like. If you're in, say, the UK or Europe, because, for example, Bet365 is so big, if your app doesn't work the way like the Bet365 app works, mm-hmm. it's considered wrong.
Yeah.
Because just it's what people are used to. And then in the US, for example, I think FanDuel would be a good example of a sport. Like, if it doesn't work like the way the FanDuel sportsbook works, it's considered wrong. And what's really interesting is if you've got people coming in with a clean slate, if one of your users who's, say, been with you for a few years does happen to accidentally misclick and end up in another sports book, it's going to look like, oh, this is like flat and square and shit. And like, this is my granddad's sports book type
exactly.
thing, right? Like that kind of smoky kind of, everyone's smoking cigarettes and there's newspapers on the wall and the floor's a bit sticky and... It's a really fascinating thing of just a completely different perspective coming in of what normal then looks like. And on the casino side, you can see it a lot with, say, the crypto casinos mm-hmm. and like the crash games and these kind of things where they're just not available on a regular casino. So it's a really interesting demographic then you're hitting into, and that kind of clean slate does give you a lot of runway to play with. That's phenomenal.
It does. Yeah. It's really fun. And it's, you know, and we think about it in everything we do, even the small details. Like, you know, for example, you know, I mean, I think in the UK that you call them accumulators, we call them parlays in North America. Yep. But, you know, on a rivalry, we're like, nobody's going to know what a parlay is. Let's call them a combo. That's what's, you know, that's video gamey, you know.
Which is a more, yeah, because every video game's got a combo, but it's also yep. a far more... like intuitively that name, if you're makes a lot more sense than a parlay does.
Yeah.
Like just hands down, it makes far more sense. Oh, I'm combining bets. Of course.
Like, of course. Yeah. It's just natural. And, you know, and just in the, even the design language we use, like, I mean, for a new bettor, you open up Bet365 or FanDuel or, you know, any of the big guys. And it's intimidating. The interface is busy. It's complicated. There's numbers, there's grids, there's, you know, it's a lot to take in and it can be a bit intimidating. So, you know, we've actively tried to make our interface, you know, we've actively gone away from that. We've tried to keep it clean. We haven't jammed in 100, you know, promotions and bonus promotions and, you know, pre-made combos and everything into the interface. We just keep it clean, keep it simple, keep it user-friendly and make that kind of experience of betting for the first time as simple and approachable as possible, so it doesn't feel so intimidating.
Which is why then we have to talk about cash and dash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This, so when I saw when Cody shared the video on LinkedIn, so for those who are listening, we'll put links to stuff in the notes. But think of it like a video. Basically, it's a you've taken the concept of a slot machine and applied it to a video game. Mm-hmm. Is that the best way? How did that come about? And then just to get it off my chest, like the second you see that, your brain starts exploding because like, oh my God, you could do this in I was chatting to a mate about it and we came up with five more concepts you could apply this approach to.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Cash and Dash is really exciting. So Rivalry has a games team, which is basically, they're just game developers, again, not from the gambling space. They come from the game design space. So they're really, really passionate about creating games that feel like video games, that have that kind of higher level of entertainment. And basically, I mean, we kind of started our own games team. Like for a long time, Rivalry didn't have a casino product. And we were really, really it took us a while. We were really nervous about adding a casino product to begin with because we didn't think that casino would appeal to our audience very much. I mean, one thing, when your audience is all video game players, they have a certain level of entertainment that they expect. You know, in the attention economy, like they're playing League of Legends, they're playing Counter-Strike, they're playing Dota, they're playing StarCraft, they're playing these AAA video games is how they're spending their time. And we kind of thought for so long, like, how can we offer a slot machine and a shell game and expect them to be entertained by this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a long time we avoided that, and we kind of did it in the wrong order, where we actually made an original games team before we even had a casino product. So we were making our own games before we had third-party games on our website. We wanted to make games that would meet our users on their level of entertainment. And we feel that's like very, very important to our audience, to have kind of like something that looks like a video game, feels like a video game, has a higher level of graphics, has moments of delight and entertainment, and feels like a complete experience, not just something you kind of like idly play for a few minutes while you're waiting for your esports match to start.
Yeah, it's perfect. And there's a ton of apps where you're like, this would just be like a normal kind of mobile phone game.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Temple Run type game or whatever, like, kind of that kind of genre. And it just, again, it's, you see it and you kind of go, these guys just get it. It's it's so exciting. So you've touched on casino.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you guys approached casino in a completely different way.
Yeah.
Talk about casino.
Yeah, casino.exe. It's a fascinating product. It's, you know, it's something that I think could only come out of Rivalry. Yeah, like I mentioned, for a long time, we were very apprehensive about casino. We kind of like, you know, we knew there was a bit of, you know, casinos kind of smelled smoky. And we were really afraid of dropping a casino into our product and, you know, kind of cheapening it in the eyes of our users who weren't used to seeing, you know, that kind of casino product in their day-to-day experience. And, you know, as a complete design control freak, I was really nervous about giving up control of the UX of these games and putting somebody else's product in our product where we have no control over the quality or the interface or anything like that. For a long time, we kind of, you know, we're thought about how do we bring this to our audience? What can we do to kind of make this fun, entertaining, not feel, you know, slimy, and kind of appeal to our audience? So me and my team went to work and we kind of landed on this idea of the original name of the product, which was renamed for the better, was Let's Go Play on Dad's Computer. That was our working title for a long time. And we kind of hit on this thing where like we have a unique opportunity where, our users and even our employees as well, we all have this shared reverence for, for video games. And, you know, early on we talked about like, okay, well let's put a video game spin on it. Let's do away with the metaphor of you're walking into a casino. And originally we said, okay, well let's the first idea was you're walking into an arcade. You know, you'll walk into an arcade and we'll build a virtual arcade and all these different games will be arcade machines that you can go up and play. But then we got talking, we're like, well, arcades are kind of boomer. Like they don't really exist anymore. We said, what's the arcade of our audience? And, you know, it all came down to, you know, that kind of that experience of going out with your friends. You know, you're maybe 25 now, but in your youth, you would go with your friends to the internet cafe and you'd sit at the PC and you'd game together. And, you know, we kind of latched onto this idea of the late 90s, early 2000s PC gaming experience. And that's also happens to be the time and the place where esports was born. You know, it started on those machines. It started with StarCraft. It started with Warcraft 3 mods. So we kind of had this latched on this opportunity, like this is something that will resonate with our audience. It resonates with us. We all kind of have this shared experience of, you know, playing games on the old PC. So basically our casino became an old PC that you boot up virtually on our website and you've got a desktop experience. You've got your little virtual helper, which is a throwback to Clippy and Bonzi Buddy and all those terrible products back in the day.
Yeah.
All the casino games are icons. We've slipped in a whole bunch of fun Easter eggs. You can launch the MP3 player and play some of our terrible early marketing music from our startup days. There's, you know, you can change the desktop wallpaper. There's secret password protected folders in there. And it did a couple things for us. Like, you know, I talked about the shared reverence, which is just like a whole bunch of fun, but it also, it gave us the because a PC is such an open system, it gave us so many opportunities to just come up with fun ideas and slip them in and create those. We talk about moments of surprise and joy a lot while we're designing. And we always try to make sure we have those moments in everything we do. And this was just perfect for that. You know, we could do so much to it. And the final thing it really did, which was great, is it kind of gave a narrative framework to the casino that kind of glossed over the fact that these games are not as exciting as, you know, League of Legends or Dota. And all these games are inconsistent and all these games have different interfaces and none of them are going to follow any kind of like design logic. But by making them different games installed on the PC, it kind of, you know, it kind of gave it, that made that kind of like weakness part of the fun. You know, these games aren't like small and crappy. They're retro. They're supposed to be like this, you know, they're supposed to be simple and they all have different interfaces. Cause of course in the narrative of the PC, they were all created by different game development companies and you've installed them all and they're all different. So it kind of gave us a way to reframe all these different games that are wildly different and give it a consistent narrative framework within kind of the Rivalry universe.
It's a great example of design thinking. Just hands down, that kind of really, really smart, thought through process. And what it also gives you, what I love, is it gives you a platform for more.
Yes.
And that's really interesting too. And then as somebody who like first PC was an Amiga 500, it feels very at home. How did the audience, obviously there was a concern about the, you know, introducing casino to your audience. How did your audience respond? How did your users respond?
It was honestly, it exceeded our expectations. We launched casino, you know, over a year ago now. And within the first month with zero marketing, it became 40% of our handle overnight. You know, and it's hugely popular. We've got tons of great feedback from it. Users love it. And it's become like so quickly it became a core offering of our, such an important part of our business to have. So we've really kind of like doubled down on it and we're continuing to expand it. But it was a big win.
That's fantastic. That's really cool because I suppose, like you said, with this audience, it'd be so easy to lose them. Like, it'd be so easy, like, you guys are selling out. Now you're just like everybody else, right? But that'd be so easy to happen that it's managing that addition and transition, I think, is a really... It's not as easy as just slapping a casino on the website and everything.
For sure. Yeah. And we really have to be like, you know, with our audience too, like there's such a, we need to be so cautious with our audience because I mean, if you're in the video game world, you know, there's a, you know, a big, not backlash is the wrong term, but the gamers don't really like gambling mechanics slipping into their games. You know, things like loot boxes and skins gambling and all this stuff has a big stigma around it and has had like a lot of backlash from the gaming audience. So, and as a company that kind of combines video games and gambling, it's kind of playing with fire. So we need to be very careful of how we present these things to our users and we don't overstep a line and we don't come off as seedy and we don't come off as the company that's trying to slip gambling into their gaming experience. We want to be the company that's enhancing that gaming experience and, you know, and building up esports as an industry and as a form of entertainment along the way too. So, you know, things like casino.exe is kind of is a way of doing that too, where we're not just ever going to slap it on the website because we know that's not going to play. We need to give them a little bit more. We need to create something that they enjoy.
And I think for everybody listening, there's a good lesson in that of respecting your customer.
The funny thing is when we were building casino.exe, we had such a long discussion of whether this computer should be a Windows 95-esque interface or a Windows XP-like interface. Because I'm 35. I'm a little bit older than a lot of our users are. So naturally I'm like, oh, it's gotta be old Windows 95. But then,
Jesus Christ, you know,
talking to some of our,
I remember upgrading to 95 twice.
Oh boy. But then talking to some of our younger designers that are like, no, we never had Windows 95. We played games on Windows XP when we were kids. And that made me feel old. I'm like, oh geez, Windows XP was your first operating system. So we had a lot of back and forth of like exactly what era of computer should this computer be from. And we kind of landed on a bit more of a Windows XP early 3D graphics, kind of that very bubbly type visual style for the casino, rather than more of a pixel art style.
If you two want to have a conversation about, you know, being old, I'm happy to join in.
Go on, John. What was your first PC?
Or you computer? Fuckers with your hair. Well, actually, this is a true story. I've only ever worked on. I owned a PC for like 5 minutes once. I've only worked on a PC once, and that was in, would have been about 1994. And so it was on Windows 3.1 and then Windows 95. And Windows 95 was a piece of piss because it was based on the Mac OS 9, which I'd been using for years at that point. And as soon as it graduated from 95, I was lost. And I don't understand PCs now. So I started on a Mac Classic, work-wise. So what's that, like 30, 31 years ago?
Yeah, I went from Amiga 500, so the Amiga OS or whatever it was, to Windows 3.1. And then the big upgrade to 95. That was the step change.
Yeah, 3.1 was where I started when I was very young.
MS-DOS prompts, the whole fucking shebang, like just the command line stuff. And in a way, the Amiga, the Windows 95 was like, the Amiga was so far ahead in so many ways. Anyway.
It was a great gaming machine, the Amiga, actually.
Oh, it was. I remember I spent 100 punts, so basically about 100 quid, on half a megabyte RAM upgrade. So I upgraded
my. Flew when you did that as well.
I upgraded my Amiga to 1 full megabyte of RAM.
Wow!
And I was strutting. Oh, I'll tell you what, it was like
being told you were 6'2".
Oh, I'll tell you what.
If I'd done that, I'd have felt 5'7". I don't know if this has come up yet, because obviously we've been having a very rivalry specific conversation here.
Mm-hmm.
But the big esports news last week, kind of, was Nevada. And, what feels like quite a big... Do you know what? This is, what's really interesting about this is everybody's... I've seen a lot of talk about the decision to possibly allow esports betting in Nevada. And the people that are behind it are very smart people. And they've had people like the lovely Seth Shaw has been, you know, speaking to panels and stuff to sort of say, here's why we should do this, right? But what's really interesting about it is if it goes through and you can then bet on esports in Nevada, you've still got the exact same stumbling blocks with Nevada mobile gambling that you have always had. And there's a really interesting piece in the Nevada Independent over the weekend by the brilliant Howard Stutz. You probably say that differently in America, but you know, I'm English, Howard Stutz. And it's about a 1500 word article about how, if you want to do mobile sports wagering in Nevada, you have to register in person in a brick and mortar establishment.
But that's not, there's a few states that have that,
but it's bonkers. It's not.
Oh, for sure. But so what's the, okay, so what's the, John, what's the rules then on the, so esports betting, but you have to do it in person or you can do it online in Nevada?
You'd be able to do it on an app or whatever if you go to the casino.
To register.
Running the book to register in person.
So you're staying at a hotel, you register in the casino, then you can gamble from your room kind of thing.
Boy, that's a tricky one, you know?
Why? Why is that tricky?
You could do that. I'm thinking about some places globally rather than Nevada, because some places you can only gamble in some parts of the building. You can't necessarily gamble across.
Yeah, because I thought mobile gambling in Nevada was like you've got a tablet, but you're on the sportsbook floor. I thought that was, but I could be wrong.
Do you know what? I'm going to have to read Howard's article again.
So the big question for David is how many chickens is David sending to Nevada? Is the big question.
I'll send one chicken. They can have a chicken. Honestly, it's kind of funny because like you hear about this kind of stuff, and you know, and I can guarantee our audience doesn't care about any of that. Like they're not the esports audience is. They don't really care about Vegas. They don't care about Nevada. They don't care about that. They're placing bets from their home, from their basements, on their gaming PCs. They're watching esports at home or at a bar with their friends. It's it's a very the esports industry was, you know, born on the internet, lives on the internet. It's very decentralized. And
could you see a situation? So if you look at the kind of, we've had some great Nevada guests on recently. When you look at the trends for Nevada, it's all about making it a destination, right? Mm-hmm. So you got Formula One in a couple of weeks. You've got UFC. They've got the ice hockey. They're getting the baseball team. They've got the NFL team, the residencies, etc. Could you see a situation with this law passing then where one of the esport majors is now in Vegas?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You could definitely throw an esports major in Vegas, and I think it would do fairly well. It's kind of funny that the way esports works in just globally across the world is esports is actually very, very small in North America compared to other regions of the world. It's not. It just hasn't caught on in the same way in Canada and the US as it has in, you know, South America and parts of Southeast Asia and even parts of Europe and Eastern Europe, is where esports is much bigger and much more massive. And that's kind of the, you know, it's interesting how that happened. Nobody really knows for sure, but my kind of like my working theory is, those regions, you know, particularly South America and Southeast Asia, you know, slightly lower, smaller economy regions traditionally, you know, when the esports kind of, you know, scene was building up, you know, a lot of the young people there who started esports at a grassroots level, they couldn't afford home PCs. They all went to LAN cafes. Any region that esports is really, really big, you can usually track it back to a history of having a LAN cafe culture.
Or, and I'm going to build on this idea, or access to very high-speed internet.
Yes.
Yeah. So like South Korea, Finland, like or Sweden, for example. So there's
Wales.
So, but I agree. I think there was, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think, right? Why you say, you know, North America hasn't necessarily seen the growth that the rest of the world has. But we've seen a very, very clear model in the last few years as to how to build understanding and growth. And esports has the potential to do this.
Yes.
In a way that nothing's ever done it before. Because if you look at, and the obvious one is it F1 Drive to Survive?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's been credited with the explosion of people being interested in Formula One in the US. Combine that with the Las Vegas nighttime event, and you've got a humongous potential right there. Vegas is just absolutely set up for a major tournament. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Everything is already there.
Yeah.
But to build on,
I would go.
And yeah, it'd be, but if you think, okay, so the
the hypothesis I've always worked to with esports is somebody from the gambling industry, like a sports book, stumbles in and goes, right, we're going to do esports. Mm-hmm. And they're treating it like a thing, like it's one big thing.
Yeah.
When actually, like, it's 20 different games, mm-hmm. which are as different to each other as baseball is to American football is to soccer. So it's actually, you're not just doing esports. So, like, if you take John's idea of the Drive to Survive, well, there could be 20 of those for yes. each of the different games.
For sure. Yeah. And you're absolutely right where most, you know, you go to most sports book websites and it's, you know, you see baseball, hockey, you know, soccer, esports. And yeah. they treat it as one. And it's really interesting too how, you know, different countries, just like traditional sports, have different esports that are popular there. You know, like in South America, League of Legends is, you know, the biggest esports in the world. It's massive. But then you go over to kind of Eastern Europe and it's all about Counter-Strike. They love Counter-Strike. And even country to country, like, you know, Brazil is huge about League of Legends, but Peru, they love Dota. You know, so it's yeah. just, you know, it is as diverse as sports and it has kind of those regional fandoms. And you kind of have to understand all of that to make it work.
In Wales, it's the original handheld split-screen Donkey Kong.
That's a great game. It's a great game.
I've still got mine.
No way.
Listen, I've just been looking up the sportsbook thing. I've been reading Howard's article, which I did read this morning, and I'm just reading it again. It's like, my God, I'm just racking up the hits on this site. It is... So most other states with legalized sports betting allow for mobile registration, so bettors never need to set foot inside a casino. Nevada has retained in-person registration because of casino operators who primarily target local gamblers. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So FanDuel, DraftKings, etc. aren't looking at Nevada because it's this quite massive hurdle. Mm-hmm. It's not a small state either. Hang on. Sports betting, lucrative part of Nevada's casino industry. Basically, what was your question again?
Are you allowed to bet from your bedroom in Nevada?
Yeah, you would be. You would be as long as you've done the in-person sign up.
So you go to your hotel, you check in, you head to the sports book, you register, you go up to your room, put it on the big TV, and yeah. you can bet on your phone.
But then, you know, anywhere you are in Nevada, then you should realistically be able to place a bet because they've seen you, they know you're real, etc.
Yeah.
And presumably they've done whatever checks they want to do.
Yeah. But then, yeah, it's a niche, I think, from that perspective, because it's so localized to like your 4 days and or 3 days in Nevada, right? It's quite a...
Yeah, and you know most of the locals' markets. I mean, given that the state has such a large amount of desert, most of your local players are going to be in a population center or very close to one.
Yeah.
So,
but it's one of those. But again, if you like, it's a really interesting contrast, right? If you take like what David's been talking about with how they say approached a product feature or launching casino on their website, so very very customer first, right? And then on the flip side, you've got this legacy, you know, we've put a hole in the ground. We've spent billions. We're going to extract every cent from you. So you will physically show up in our building on the off chance that you stick a dollar in a slot machine to register for this sport. Like, it's literally the opposite of how you should treat your customer. It's amazing that like just the two different mindsets targeting the same customer. And like, I know who my money would be on. It's crazy.
But of course, politically in Nevada, the casino operators have a lot of weight, not least because they're such massive.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like you can totally see why it came about, but it's that real, like somebody's cracked open a spreadsheet and like, we might make an extra $20 if we do it this way.
Thing is though, right? If you look at who the major operators are in Nevada at the moment, now just bear with me because it's in here. I can actually confirm this. It is... BetMGM
mm-hmm.
and William Hill US, which is owned by Caesars, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, if they're the top two sports betting, you know, they're third and fourth in the country, I think. BetMGM and Caesars Sportsbook.
But BetMGM is a solid, third. But then probably casino, it's probably bigger, probably second.
But what the being top one and two in Nevada is like, you know.
Well, it's
like having shit yourself the least in a group of people that have shit themselves. Well, no, this but is it's not my best analogy.
No, but it's what you're missing here is right. If you take that brand, like okay, if you put David in charge of this problem, right? Well, how is he going to approach it? The way he's going to approach it is okay. We're number three or four in the rest of America, okay, in all the legal states. We are the top dog. We've got on the ground branding in Nevada, which is a massive thoroughfare for millions upon millions of people every month, right? If we give them such a great brand experience here and we link in their mind the great time they had in Vegas with our brand, then they go back to their home state. They've probably got the app on, like, can we get the app on the phone? So we're sitting there beside FanDuel or DraftKings, and maybe they'll just, you know what? I've still got credits with these guys, or I'm going to earn some more points so I can go back to Vegas. Like, just that joining the dots bit of treating it like Disneyland, or like a theme park, and just really driving through that entire end-to-end brand experience. I think it's a long play, right? It's not going to hit your quarterly numbers. Not this year, not next year. It's a very long play, but you've got an opportunity to probably hit your demographic at some point over a five-year period. And that's how I'd be thinking about it.
Which is why they pay you the big bucks.
Anyway,
yeah, and I mean, I don't do much of our marketing and our our event planning and stuff these days. We have people who are way more talented than me that take care of all of that, all of the external promotion. But you know, like one thing we Rivalry doesn't do, and this is partially due to our demographic and partially because we just went through the legalization of sports betting in Ontario, and oh my God, the advertisements. I had no idea how many sports betting advertisements you can see in a day. But you know, we don't do any print media. We don't do any, we don't do billboards. We don't do bus ads. We don't do anything like that. All of our marketing is really focused on creating our philosophy when it comes to marketing is create something of value for the customer. Don't just advertise to them. So, you know, like our branding team is great. We do a lot of, team sponsorships, and we partner with a lot of gaming streamers and things like that. And when they do that, we're always very sure to not just sign them up and slap our logo on their stream, but actually work with them to create content, put on events, put on award shows, put on, you know, small tournaments, get programs where, you know, we help them connect with their audience so their audience can, you know, play games against the streamer, which is super exciting for, you know, for a stream viewer.
Nice.
And we do tons of stuff like that because, again, we kind of feel like, you know, our audience is so tech savvy. They're born on the internet, grew up on the internet. They can smell bullshit from a mile away. And, you know, we can't really get away with just doing, you know, traditional advertisement and shoving down their throat. It's really about creating something valuable for them that they feel like Rivalry is giving something to them, or creating an experience they didn't have before and something they can share. And that's kind of like core in our product. It's core in our marketing. It's kind of core across our entire company. And it is like you said, it is a long play. Like, you know, we're going after an audience that, you know, is, you know, I think 60% of sports bettors are over the age of 35. And, you know, and we're going after a much younger audience. We're kind of going after, you know, 25 to 30, you know, year old. The average age of our customer is 25. So, you know, and, you know, at that age, you don't have as much disposable income. So, you know, so we don't whale hunt. We don't, you know, put our investments in that because we know that's not our demographic. We're really about getting mass appeal and building up brand loyalty and brand recognition with this generation as they age up. And hopefully as they kind of grow up and get familiar with Rivalry and it becomes their preferred sports book, you know, as this audience grows up, we kind of grow up with them. And then, you know, in 10 years, we'll have all the 35-year-olds with the disposable income. So it is a bit of a long play, but
That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, mate. There's nothing wrong with that. You just no, but it's a. What was I going to say? It goes back, and I think probably it goes back to the early days with the skins betting and stuff. That background, I think, of like you really have to engage. You have to understand your audience. Yeah. You have to really, really engage with them. And if you, like you said, it is playing with fire. Like if you make one mistake, it could like over. It can be that simple. So I think it's absolutely the right approach. And the adding the value and being part of the community and not selling is not being, you know, the shouty kind of like bet now kind of thing, is refreshing. And that's why I was so excited to meet you. So thank you so much. It's brilliant.
Yeah, no problem. This has been great.
Yeah, it's been all right. David, listen, just for you wrap up, do have a couple of minor questions for sure. You that maybe people will want to know the answers to, maybe they won't. Cobra Kai, have you seen it? Are you a fan?
I have, yes, I am a fan of Cobra Kai.
Come on. I knew I liked him.
It's a great show.
So it's good. And are you familiar with the work of Kevin Costner?
Yes, I am. I you know, not everything. I'm not, you know, haven't watched everything he's ever made, but I've seen a film or two.
Have you got a favorite Costner movie?
Oh, it's got to be Waterworld, right?
Trust the Canadian to bring water.
Wow.
Hang on. Is Kevin Reynolds Canadian?
Ryan Reynolds is Canadian.
No. Obviously, Ryan Reynolds is.
I mean, it's Waterworld's the only one where he drinks his own pee. It's got to be the best one.
It's probably the only one where he drinks his own pee in front of the camera.
True.
But he does look like a wee drinker. Kevin Reynolds, born in San Antonio, Texas. I was hoping that the director would turn out to be a Canadian. What about Michael Douglas? How do you feel about him?
I like Michael Douglas.
Who do you think would win in a fight between Michael Douglas and Kevin Costner?
Oh, definitely Douglas.
I think Douglas. I think Kevin Costner's, you know, he looks strong, but it's all luck, you know?
Yeah.
Michael Douglas is
he's a scrapper.
Like
he's got that dog in him. He's got that dog in him. He's you know, you're gonna have to kill him. Like he's not stopping.
I don't know, guy. I don't think it's that clear cut.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to equalize it because there's about 10 years between them, maybe a little bit more. Maybe 15 years. I'm not sure. I'm in a research phase right now. So I'm just going to look it up. So let's click on that. That's starring Kevin Costner. There it is. So Costner is, good God, he's got 7 children. Costner's 68.
Okay.
He's Douglas must be that older one, than is he?
Michael Douglas has to be older.
Twice that. He's 79.
79, wow.
Oh, you mean like in a fight today, or like a fight in their
prime? No.
It's got to be in their prime
selves. But if you were picking your Costner to be fighting peak Douglas, you'd pick Waterworld Costner, I think.
And then you pick like falling down, Michael Douglas.
I think you'd probably go a bit younger. I mean, peak acting powers, you've got to go to Wonder Boys, Michael Douglas. But peak physical prowess, maybe a little earlier than falling down, Black Rain.
Basic Attraction or Basic Instinct?
I don't know.
It's pretty jacked in that.
That was mostly his hair. As I think if you look at the credits in that film, there's a credit given to his hairspray.
No,
I wish it should be. I mean, it's
that'd be an Easter egg.
Had a crash on his motorbike in Black Rain, because he also has quite a full head of hair in Black Rain. If he had a crash and wasn't wearing a helmet, he would walk away unscathed, protected by his manly bouffant. And also, true story: when you see the transcript of this podcast, it doesn't do very well with the surname Bruford, and it usually refers to me as John Bouffant.
Sold. I'm updating the website right now. I'll put it in brackets.
Yeah, for SEO purposes. Just in case somebody happens to be searching for gambling plus bouffant. David, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's been brilliant, David. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Keep up the great work.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just at Gambling Files. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.